Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sat down and I read through. I was pleased to realize that the commissioner, Rob Manfred, his report was only 9 pages.
Okay.
I went home and I'm thinking.
that was beneficial to you as somebody that's not an avid reader. You were very appreciative of the fact that he was succinct and he kept it to 9 pages.
I'm still trying to figure out if I want to read the coffee bean that Deshaun Watson was talking about.
Well, the way that Seth Payne described it, coffee bean would be right up your alley, man. You can finish that book in about 15, 20 minutes.
Chief, that's exactly what I need. Not only would it be a good message for me, it's what I need. But when I sat down seriously, I'm thinking, damn, I'm fixing to pull a Sean Pendergast and read for about 3 hours on this deal. It's going to be a 200-page report. I ain't real interested. Yeah. 9 pages, boss. 9 pages. And so it was very quick. It was right up my alley. And I just want to run down a couple of things and point a couple of things out that I think – and, again, it's not a matter of do we agree on certain things or not, but it's more of a chance to generate a little clarity, right? It cleared some things up.
Yeah.
And so here's a couple of things. And wait, I want to get to one of them eventually, and I want you and I to have a good conversation about this because we can definitely relate. But the first thing that I think stuck out to me was that there's a clear-cut separation in the Astros organization between business and baseball. Yesterday when you and I were talking about it, and I know it's just tongue-in-cheek, we're going back and forth, but we're talking about, well, you can't fire the owner. And heck, I even saw where I think you went back and forth with the guy on Twitter of like, hey, that was racially motivated when they fired the guy. Or
Marshad and the guy in
Clippers.
Clippers, yeah. I can't even think of his name right now.
So those were – that's a different
– Donald Sterling, that's his name.
Yeah, that was a different scenario and yada, yada, yada. So the point is to clear that conversation up is – with the Astros, there is a clear-cut separation between business and baseball. Jim Crane handles the business aspect of things and literally had turned over all of the baseball aspect of things, the business of baseball on the field, duties over to the GM. Now, I don't know if that's the way that it is with every organization. I don't know that some owners are – I'm sure there's some owners are more involved in the baseball aspect of things and some aren't. But I think it's key to point out the fact that there is a, according to the investigation, the report, there is a clear-cut separation between those two things. And so that's why you see the owner not being held accountable and the GM and the head coach being accountable.
Yeah, and when you think about it, that's why you say if you're Jeff Luhnow or you are A.J. Hinch and you're put in this position to where you don't have an owner that is meddling with you and your decisions, that's why the hammer fell exclusively on you two guys because, hey, you got the keys to the kingdom. Now you're responsible for everything that goes on with it.
Right. And so the second thing, Major League Baseball at one point, and you may be able to clarify this that way, but Major League Baseball made it loud and clear initially that – the GM and the manager would be responsible if anything happened moving forward. And moving forward from early 2017, I believe, when the Red Sox got called.
There
correct
was
me
issue,
if I'm wrong.
No, you're right. There was an issue with the Red Sox. And so once that happened.
That's the issue with the Apple Watch,
with the Apple
correct?
Watches, yeah. So once that happened, Jim Crane came to his guys and said, hey, now, I hear about this stuff going on with the Red Sox. Make sure we ain't doing anything like that. And if anything does happen with that, or to that extent in our house, you guys are going to be responsible.
Right.
And so once it came to this, they already knew what the deal was.
And the way I read it, Wade, was that Major League Baseball, right, there was two different memorandums, I guess, or notices sent out by Major League Baseball stating that if it's proven that you do anything moving forward, if you're caught red-handed moving forward, the on-field manager, which I'm assuming is the GM manager of everything that goes on the field and the business side of things are elsewhere, the GM and the manager will be held responsible. So I just think that was made very clear that the Major League Baseball said if anything happens beyond this, those guys would be held responsible. And as we know now, the Astros didn't stop, right? The Astros never quit beyond that point. In fact, they continued to do this until early 2018,
yeah.
That he alluded to. Not, it didn't end in 2017. It was even end of 2018 when they continued to to what extent, I think it's unclear, but to use electronics to steal signs, they were still doing it in 2018 until essentially the way I read it was until they were proven it was really – it wasn't an advantage anymore. So they like, quit you know, doing it.
But see, that's the thing that's so frustrating when you hear about this whole scenario. They didn't need it, man.
Yeah.
They did not need to use this stuff in order to become World Series champions. And so when you look at, all right, they're getting in trouble for it because they did something that was cheating. But it didn't help them.
Right.
And eventually they figured out, okay, this is not really helping us to the extent that we're going to risk all the trouble that we'd get into by doing it. So we're going to stop. And they end up going to a World Series the following year anyway. So it just.
Not to mention, it ended up proving to be a process that was very difficult to execute.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To gain an advantage. Let me get to this one, because this is one to me that I think you and I can really relate to. When it's all said and done, it was a GM, Jeff Luhnow. It was his job to relay communications from the league pertaining to this issue and any issue. And when it's all said and done, neither him nor Hinch effectively relayed the information or enforced the information the way that it should have been with the team. Wade, in the way that you and I mean, I know when I played, every single month, maybe during the season, it was every week, but in the offseason, there were specific scheduled meetings to where whoever was responsible in the organization, whether it be a GM-type guy, a head coach, manager-type guy, or they brought in someone from a player personnel department to make sure that players understood what was going on. Just so everybody out there knows, there are meetings specifically, whether they're scheduled or spur-of-the-moment meetings, there are very extensive meetings scheduled to take care of these types of scenarios.
Yeah.
I mean, when it's all said and done, Wade, how many meetings do you think you had per year that were people coming in and explaining to you rule changes or the effects of sex? What is sexual harassment or those types of things? I mean, that happened all the time, right?
Yeah, it's a weekly thing in the NFL, at least. And in Major League Baseball, it's a little different. And I think this scenario is a little different because this is pertaining to cheating. You know what I mean? This is pertaining to something that is going on behind the scenes, under the table, and trying to basically throw a rock and hide your hands type scenario. But in the NFL, for sure, you're going to have opportunities when there's something that happened elsewhere. Like you, in this example, talking about Major League Baseball, all right, everybody knew that the Red Sox got in trouble for using the Apple Watches. So everybody in the Astros organization, the players, knew that the league is looking for this stuff. The Astros decided to keep on doing it. So the fact that they kept on doing it, somebody has to be held responsible, and that's why Luhnow and A.J. Hinch are the ones that got the hammer put on them, because the players were the ones that ended up telling.
Right.
And so when you're the person that tells,
that's a good point.
You're the one that doesn't get in trouble. And that goes in Major League Baseball or anytime you got people dealing with federal agents, whatever it may be. If you're the one that starts snitching, you're going to get immunity.
Right.
So that's what ended up happening.
Right. And I mean, to stick to this point, the point specifically of Luhnow's job is to relay communications. Wade, I remember specifically it being in the league when the drug testing, it's actually a funny story because Mark Stepnoski got sideways on him, but it was drug testing. And in the league, I believe once you were drug tested once, they couldn't drug test you again. They couldn't drug test you in the offseason. And the NFL, for some reason, was trying to change that, whether it was multiple times in the season or maybe one time in the offseason. But the point is we had a meeting with a representative, both from the NFLPA and from, I think, the NFL to discuss that, and the Dallas Cowboys. And everybody's in the room. The whole team's in the room. You're discussing it. And this is one of those types of deals where, whoa, cheating? Let's get into a meeting and talk about this.
Yeah.
Let's sit down and talk about this specifically with everybody in the room so that there's no misunderstanding.
And I think the problem with that line of thinking is that the way baseball works and the amount of power that players have and the idea that the manager is somebody that's managing egos, managing vibes in the locker room and managing that stuff and not wanting to piss anybody off, that I think allowed for this this whole situation to fester.
Yeah.
Because if AJ Hinch takes a hard line, how the players reacted to that, that would have been very interesting to see how that would have all transpired.
Sure. Well, we'll dig into each one of them. We got plenty of time. We got you from two right now to 6 p.m., so Houston, buckle up. Like I said, it's still smoky out there. The dust hadn't settled yet. We got several things to address. There was a big-time game last night. There was a big-time football game last night of historic proportions, Wade. This is worth digging into. I know it's not a Texas team, but this is worth digging into. Last night was an unbelievable national championship game. LSU is out there making history. We'll talk about that football game and much, much more right here on Sports Radio 610 next.
Burrow's got time. Launching for the end zone. Jump ball. Touchdown, Terrence Marshall. And Burrow believes that was a crucial play to stretch the lead. You can see by their reaction. Dropped a dime again.
From now until you meet with your coaching staff, how do you spend this time with your family and friends?
You know, we're going to go back to it. We got a nice suite. I got Kelly and my three boys with me.
Uh-huh.
We're probably going to get a ham sandwich or maybe some boudin or something, go to bed and wake up tomorrow and do it again.
There you have it. Ed Ogeron. Wade, I'm going to tell you, man, I played for some good coaches. Houston Nutt's my guy.
Yeah.
I played for some good coaches. Joe Ferguson was my quarterback coach. Wade Wilson, God bless his soul, was my quarterback coach, man. But when I watch football, very rarely do I come across a guy and go, man, I would love to play for that guy. I would love to be in the locker room. I'd love to be a part of one of his teams. I am absolutely stoked for the fact that Ed O goes over there, takes a head job, goes through a lot of adversity, takes a head job at his home school, LSU, and goes on and wins a national title versus the Clemson Tigers 42-25.
Yeah, man, he's one of those guys that everybody and anybody can get behind. He's one of those guys that you say to yourself, like, hey, he does it the right way. He's a good person. He genuinely cares about you and your success on and off the field. And when it's a good person and they succeed, it just makes you feel good.
Yep.
It makes you feel good inside that you were a part of it or that you got to witness it. And you've seen the different negative things that have been said about him, the situation that happened to him at USC. And now USC's probably looking like, damn, how do we screw that up?
You know what
I mean? But he just never would have fit out there. And that negative thing that happened to him out there in USC set him up perfectly so that he could be where he was supposed to be, back home. And at LSU, winning a national championship on the biggest stage and having one hell of a damn season.
Wait, you talking about like some of the – when I was – he was at Ole Miss, and I believe it was when I was covering the SEC, or maybe it was right before. But some of the stuff you hear that he had done, like the first team meeting, he rips his shirt off, makes all the guys stand up and rip their shirt off and take the earrings out, and just kind of real far-fetched, kind of outside-the-box, aggressive way of thinking and a way of coaching. And
the worm in his mouth?
Yeah, yeah. Did you see that? That was good stuff. But they, you know, the thing about Ed O that I love is the humility, right? I mean, the fact there's something about a guy that's extremely successful, obviously, I don't care if a guy's extremely successful or not, but there's something about the guy that says, you know what? I screwed some things up in the past. I made some bad decisions. I maybe didn't always say and do the right things and treat people the way that I should have made it or I should have treated them, but I've learned from it. I'm better today because of it, and you're going to watch the finished product or today's product of me and where I've come and watch what we can do at LSU. And this dude goes and puts literally – I don't know – I can't think of another season, Wade, that's better. This is the greatest single season by a team in modern era in college football history. When you talk about – 15-0, they beat Clemson 42-25, snapping a 29-game win streak. 7 victories over top 10 teams this season, most in FBS history, by the way. Clemson, OU, Georgia, Bama, Auburn, Florida, and Texas, I believe, are the 7 that they beat. Check this out. Only team in the FBS history with a 5,000-yard passer, and that's Joe Burrow, 1,000-yard rusher, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, two, 1,500-yard receivers, Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson. And by the way, Randy Moss's son caught 2 tugs last night, and Terrence Marshall was in that highlight climbing a ladder to go get one. Wait, I just don't know how, all things considered, we could tab a team having a better season than what LSU wrapped up last night.
You really can. And the thing about it is they started off the season against Texas and they won that game in a shootout. And everybody was like, damn, LSU actually has an offense this year.
Yes.
They're going to be able to compete. But you know what they did throughout the season? They got better and better and better. And they got better all the way through the national championship game. They beat Clemson, a team that you saw how they played against Ohio State last week or 10 days ago or however long it was. They played a hell of a good ball game against a damn good football team, and they got outclassed by LSU. LSU was just head and shoulders better than everybody in college football, and there were some damn good teams in college football. You got to give them a lot of credit for what they were able to do.
Wade, when you talk about getting better, I think most of that improvement, the offensive improvement was damn near instant. When Joe Brady took the gig from New Orleans, which is a really, really cool story of how they found him. He was with the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah.
And apparently there was a coach's clinic and Ed O. I don't know if Ed O
Ham
was there.
Sandwich.
Yeah, there you go. Or if he sent his guys down there, some of his offensive staff down there, essentially for a coach's clinic. Well, Sean Payton, for some reason or another, couldn't lead the clinic. So Joe Brady, being sub 30 years old, 20 something years old, took over and did it.
Yeah.
And that's when LSU was introduced to him at that meeting. Well, then fast forward, I don't know if it was a week or a month or 2 months, but they're looking for maybe a little bit of an upgrade or an addition. Let's say an addition to the offensive staff. Because that offense had been very archaic, for lack of better terms.
Forever.
Yeah, forever. And quarterback, they had really good quarterbacks that show up and play well from time to time, and a couple of them won big, and they ended up getting a shot in the league, but they were never really good, polished, clean quarterbacks. The offense was never a well-oiled machine, always unbelievably talented, obviously.
Yeah.
But anyway, so they go down there, and several weeks or months later, they're looking for an addition to their staff. And Joe Brady's name comes up. And Joe Brady ends up at LSU and turns this thing around offensively. Where I was going with the improvement, to me, Wade, on the defensive side of football, bro.
Yeah.
I mean, they've always been really good at LSU on defense. But early in the season, they struggled. And they made huge strides throughout the season.
Yeah, they struggled mightily early in the season. You saw Texas was moving the ball up and down the field on them. And I mean, I was about to say that they were good offense back then, and they definitely regressed throughout the season. But you know that at that time, nobody took LSU seriously to be a national championship contender because the defense wasn't on par of what you would look at to be on that level. But as the season went on, they got better and better week in and week out. The performance they did against Oklahoma, legit. Yeah. The performance that they had against Clemson last night. I mean, mind you now, this is Clemson. This is wide receiver U. This is Trevor Lawrence. This is Travis Etienne. Like, these guys will be first-round draft picks up and down the board, and 25 points, man. They had a hell of a performance against Clemson, and that's the reason why I agree with you that this is the most impressive season I've ever seen in college football.
You know what's crazy, man, is when you look at talk about the defensive performance, and I don't know the X's and O's behind what exactly they were doing. I know they were rolling coverages. They were disguising looks really, really well. But their ability to keep Trevor Lawrence off balance was impressive, because that's the one thing. Trevor Lawrence is a young cat. When you let him lean on a tree and raise that 30-06 and get that scope nice and steady on that tree, he's going to hurt you now. It's sniper accurate. But that big cat, when you make him move and you make him throw off platform, as popular it is as it is today in training – for all these guys to work off platform throw, you can work all you want at that stuff. When you're 6'5", 6'6", you're still a much more potent quarterback, thrower of the football, if you work on how – it's not about what all you can do off platform.
Yeah.
Right? To me, it's about work your ass off to stay on platform. And if you play a football season and you throw 80% of your balls on platform because you work it versus 50% – on platform because you're working everything else, then you're going to have a better season. They were able to get him essentially, quote unquote, off platform last night, throwing across his body, falling out of throws, and he just was not able to complete those throws. And it ended up being a big time factor in the game because he is nasty from the pocket, man.
And then think about this. LSU had the type of personnel that when he did get out of the pocket, when he did scramble, they had athletes that could run with them stride for stride, catch them, tag them when they got there, to also be physical in a run game. Not every team in America has those type of horses, those type of dogs at the linebacker level that can allow you to spy a guy like Trevor Lawrence. And so it paid dividends yesterday for him.
Yeah, wait, talk about a couple of the other teams. You and I were talking before the show, man. You're talking about the other teams is you know, maybe the 2001 Miami.
Yeah, Miami Hurricanes. That, I mean, looking at that team and the amount of first-round draft picks that were on that roster, yeah. I would love to see if there was a maybe, you know, remember the video game NCAA football back in the day? If you could simulate that matchup between this year's LSU team, that Miami team 2001, back in Nebraska teams back in the day with Tommy Frazier and them.
Yeah.
I would love to see some of those teams match up and play. But, you know, you don't want to fall into the trap of recency bias. But seeing the way LSU played this year,
yeah,
I've never seen such dominance at the college level.
Yeah, the results too, Wade. I mean, when you talk about, I think if we sat here and said, you know, matchup wise and talent wise and draft pick wise, I think it's a very valid point of Miami and Nebraska and some of the earlier Miami teams. A couple of the earlier Miami teams were nasty. I think a couple of Florida State teams back in the day were nasty. Some of the Texas teams back in the day were nasty. But when you talk about running through a schedule of top opponents, I mean, they beat seven top 10 opponents, bro. Like at one point in time, that opponent was in the top 10 in college football. And then on top of that, you scored 40 on them jokers. You averaged across the board 40 plus on them jokers and just blew the records out of the book, man. I just don't see how it's not the greatest season of all time.
Yeah, when you figure out you look at the numbers that they beat, that the AP top four teams in consecutive weeks to finish the season. That's ridiculous.
Wow.
You beat Alabama, you beat Clemson, you beat Oklahoma, you beat Clemson, and you beat Ohio State. What was the other one? There was another one I'm missing.
I'm trying to think who it was before that. But nonetheless, the point is they beat a bunch of them. Georgia.
It was Georgia. It was Georgia,
They beat Bama, Georgia, OU, Clemson. I mean, they banged it out over a hell of a schedule, man. Golly, I don't know that anybody had a tougher schedule. I think A&M had a tough schedule this year, but I mean, that's one of the toughest schedules in the year. And you go out there and go 15-0 and set records along the way, man. Great job to LSU. Congrats to Ed O and Joe Burrow and everybody involved. That was a big time win. Wade, watching last night's title game, Wade.
Yeah,
it made me furious about the Texans' offense. I'll tell you exactly what I'm talking about next. Joined by Wade Smith, you're listening to Houston Sports Leader Sports Radio 610. I'm sitting there watching a national championship game last night, and I find myself being absolutely furious at Bill O'Brien and the Texans' offense. And it's pretty simple. It's pretty simple to me, right? It starts with last week we have Dan Orlovsky on our show. What day was that, Wade? Thursday. We have Dan Orlovsky on our show. It's leading up to the divisional round playoff game between the Houston Texans and who they play? The Kansas City Chiefs,
City Chiefs, baby.
Trying to forget about it, man, but I can't. And this is what Dan Orlovsky had to say about Bill O'Brien, the play caller, essentially.
Now, I think most people think of Deshaun Watson as one of the most special quarterbacks in the NFL. I'll be honest with you guys. I think most people look at Bill O'Brien as a head coach that might be holding him back somewhat. So if Bill O'Brien can get this win, that's going to go a long way in changing the narrative about him tied to and what he can do for Deshaun Watson and catapulting him into kind of superstar.
I agree that it would have gone a long way. The point is that we are now sitting here Tuesday afternoon, and that did not happen. They did not have a good outing. They did not validate what Bill O'Brien and Deshaun Watson may be as a team moving forward. To me, it raised more concerns, Wade. So I go back to Dan Orlovsky, and I go, what does that mean to me where we sit right now today, right? And to me, what that means is it validates our concerns, right? To hear when you know when national media types and I love Dan Orlovsky, so I don't mean that negatively. And hell, we're talking heads, so I'm not throwing.
Dan is one of the best in the business. I'm so not throwing any darts. You got to qualify that guy. Right. That guy's legit.
He's the best. So when you hear the best in the business, former quarterback, knows what the hell's going on.
Former Texan.
When he's got those concerns, it validates what we talk about every day on this radio.
Yeah,
okay?
Man. Yeah.
And so my point is there's a serious concern there. I'm sitting there watching that national title game last night. I can't help but think about it. And I'm looking at it like this, Wade. I see college, not one, but two college offenses doing things very, very well that I don't even see the Texans attempt to apply or improve upon, and it absolutely infuriates me.
Yeah.
It absolutely infuriates me, bro.
Well, listen, you got to look at Deshaun Watson. Remember the audio he said the other day where he was watching the Clemson game and he said, man, I was watching him. I could call out the players. I knew everything
they were doing. Yeah.
The offense is already it's made for him to utilize to win a national championship. Why not utilize the same thing here at the NFL level?
Why not?
It's confusing me. I don't understand.
Let me tell you what I saw last night, Wade. And you saw it. Hell, you watched the game. Both offenses used tempo multiple times last night to create an advantage. I mean, you can look at it one of two ways. You can look at it and say that LSU, and I may be wrong on which one it was because both of them were doing it so damn well, right? But one of the teams goes down, big play, down to like the 4 or 5 yard line. They run up there and they're fixing to bang another play, and the defensive coordinator has to call a timeout because he wasn't prepared for the goal line situation. They went from a field situation to a goal line situation.
Yeah.
And they used tempo to get there. So the other team, the opposing team, had to bang a timeout. So you can look at it and say the other team wasn't prepared. I choose in that situation to look at it as one team knows how to use tempo. Actually, both of them do. But that at that point in time, that offense knew how to use tempo, and they did it multiple times throughout the game to gain an advantage. When I say gain an advantage, I mean – not only get a receiver open or get a mismatch, but get a team to waste timeouts.
Yeah.
Right? To get a team into a chaotic situation where you can then take advantage of them. And it was absolutely beautiful to watch two colleges do it. And we've been wanting to see that for 18 games this year with the Texans. And we very rarely saw it, if at all.
And I tell you what, I don't want people to take this and think to themselves, well, if you go tempo, then you can't win the time of possession. You're going to be giving the ball back up too quick. That's not the tempo we're talking about here. We're talking about utilizing tempo as an advantage to either get the defense in a position that they don't want to be in, force them to use a timeout right. that they don't want to use, utilize back-to-back plays because you found out something that they could not stop.
Tell me this, though, Wade. Tell me this. You said time of possession.
Yeah.
Are you disappointed if the Texans are more aggressive, high scoring oriented than they are time of possession guys in the league?
I would much rather them score a bunch of points than be time of possession guys. But what I'm saying is you can't have your cake and eat it too.
You can be a tempo team,
but then also win the time of possession, because what you're trying to do is use tempos to move the chains, keep the ball away from your opponent, not use tempo to have big explosive plays 60, 70 yards down the field.
Got a couple more for you, bro.
What's up?
Clemson. And it pains me because it's the same school that Deshaun Watson went to, obviously, same coaching staff. But I saw Clemson get a 6'5", long-legged, essentially rocket-arm quarterback on the edge with creative routes to get the ball out quick, to convert third downs, and it was a work of art, my man.
Yeah.
And, again, those are things that when you got Deshaun Watson using tempo and getting him on the edge with good, quick, easy throws. And I say easy. I'm saying easy for Deshaun Watson, not for me. These are 15-yard speed-cut out routes, right? These are flood concepts with layers to the sideline so that your quarterback has options. I'm sitting there watching it, and every time – who was calling that game last night? Herb Street. Every time Herb Street goes, man, that's a great job of getting big Lawrence on the edge and getting him a good line of sight and a good easy throw, I just cringe. I just cringe, and I go, man, why? How come we ain't watching that on Sunday?
Were you feeling a little envious?
Come on, man.
Feeling a little jealous?
I'm just sitting there going, damn it, man. What's going on here? I got a third one for you. LSU, right? I think it was a work of art, bro, when they were clearly confused at the beginning of the game in how they were going to protect Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
Right? Clemson's getting to him.
Yeah.
They got pinned deep a couple times. Clemson's getting to him. And it was an absolute work of art of how they started using, you know how teams in college always use the look to the sideline thing to get a play? And, mm-hmm. and most of the time, that's a full-blown play. It was blatantly obvious early in that game that Joe Burrow was looking to the sideline for protection. The receivers weren't moving. The receivers weren't even looking at the sideline. They knew what the call was. There was a line dance going on between Joe Burrow, the sideline, and Joe Brady and Emsminger in the box trying to figure out what the hell was going on from a protection standpoint. And you know what? You know what? The part that drives me crazy, Wade?
What's that?
Is by about midway through the first quarter, they had a bead on that joker.
Yeah.
And they were protecting Burrow and slinging that thing all over the park. And we watched the damn Texans over here. And when the game's on the line against Buffalo – Deshaun Watson's got to make a Superman play because there's none of that going on to protect a man.
Yeah, when you look at what you saw with Joe Burrow doing LSU do, they're trying to figure out what type of blitzes that Clemson is going to bring, where are they bringing pressure from, figuring out you're doing that from the line of scrimmage. That's an advantage you have by going up-tempo and being on the line and not huddling. You get to the line, you force the defense to show their hand, and then you can work off of that, get your protection set up right. That's been something that the Texans have struggled with all year long, is figuring out the best protection schemes to handle certain blitz and pressures from the interior and off the edges. It's been something they dealt with last year against the Colts in the playoffs. It's something they improved on from that slot blitz, but it didn't improve to a level that it needed to get to. You got to understand that Deshaun Watson, most of the times he was getting hit, it was because they were bringing extra guys or they were bringing guys from spots where you should have been picked up if the protecting scheme was set up better. Yeah. And that was an issue that they had all year.
Well, Wade, to me, it's one of those deals where you look at it and you go, regardless of whether it was on Deshaun or it was on the scheme or it was the receiver went too deep, the fact that it is what it is, and then we turn the TV on and watch two offenses go at it and have no – and like, I thought Joe Burrow and LSU was in trouble. In the first two possessions, I'm going – man, I may have been wrong on that LSU pick. Yeah. And then you watch them, boom, they're just figuring it out. It's so beautiful. And the whole goal was they figured out where they were going to bring pressure from, how they were going to bring it, how they were going to protect him, and then it was on and popping. And that's just the fact that the Texans offense can't figure out how to be better with protections and use the very, very small things to create advantages for the players, it's borderline criminal, man.
That's the problem when you got to think about what's going on over there. There's ways that you can dictate to opposing teams, but if you're going to never use tempo, if you're going to never dictate to another team, you're going to struggle.
No question.
And that's what you're getting out of the Texans right now. They're struggling picking up blitzes. They're struggling keeping Deshaun Watson upright because they get to the line, they chill for a little bit, they're going to figure it out, and then they're going to run a play. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're not going to utilize the tempo. And then – What I didn't understand watching that game is you're down 10 points, you're down 17 points. You didn't even go tempo at that point of the game. When you're early in the game, if you're not going to use it to your advantage to get a lead and keep a lead and sustain a lead, once you get down, I don't understand why you're not utilizing tempo at that point of the game. Why are you not utilizing no huddle?
Yeah.
And so to me, that just tells me that that's not in the thought process. That's not something that they felt like was going to be in the best interest to win that game. And you see how it ended up turning out. That's the part where you have to question the decision-making that was going on over there.
Well, to me, that's the one thing, the most important thing that has to change is that offensive approach, that offensive in-game play calling, using tempo, using small things to create advantage. I just think that has to change, and I think it's likely to change as well. I think you're wasting another year, Deshaun Watson, if you just keep doing the same old things. That's Wade Smith. I'm Clint Stern. You're listening to Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Wade, there's another quarterback, obviously. There's another quarterback in the news that has some Houston ties. Former U of H starting quarterback De'Eriq King, he officially announces that he has entered the transfer portal. Now, here's De'Eriq King, I guess, I don't know, a few months back when he decided to take the unorthodox route of redshirting his senior year to allow him another year of eligibility.
Never thought. We never thought about leaving, never thought about transferring, any of that. To be honest with you, I didn't think about redshirting. I didn't think about doing any of this until everything was on the table. Until we had the open conversation with me, Coach Hogerson, my family, Coach Hogerson, and the coaching staff. So that's really all it came from.
that was roughly week two or three of the college football season when he decided to redshirt, sit the year out. The team didn't start out the way that they thought it possibly could with a new coach in Dana Holgorsen, and he decided to, again, unorthodox route to redshirt, but I can't say that I blame him. Looking back on it, if I'm in his shoes, if I'm his family, there's rules out there in today's game where you can, hey, you can take a pass. You got up to four games. You play in those four games. If you don't go beyond those four games, you have the opportunity to redshirt that year. I thought it was a creative way for a player and his family to use this. There was some controversy around it. I totally understand that as well. But it was, to me, it gave him an opportunity to get another year of college ball, and it gave him the opportunity to possibly have a chance at the next level. Now, his head coach, current head coach over at U of H, Dana Holgorsen, he also commented at the same time when De'Aaron King commented on his redshirt year.
He's a special player, you know, and there's a lot of coaches out there that cheat, you know. So, you know, I mean, he's going to be up here in May. You guys ask him questions and everything, but, you know, all indications are he's not going in the transfer portal. So if he's not in the transfer portal, it's kind of against NCAA rules and regulations to be pursuing that, so to speak. So I got no reason to believe that. I've never got the impression that Derek is leading me astray in anything over the last 9 months. He's a wonderful kid. He's a Houstonian. He's a Houston Cougar. He chose to come to this school.
I tell you what it is. He's officially in the transfer portal, so now he can, quote unquote, be recruited by other schools. I think we'd be a fool to think that other schools didn't reach out throughout this season. In one way, shape, or form. In today's world, all these players know each other. They work out together. They throw, they catch, they work their feet. They get in the weight room together. There's definitely some conversation that was had. But he's officially in the transfer portal, Wade Smith. What do you think this means for the future of De'Aaron King?
Well, I think he's going to go to somewhere that is a Power 5 program and have an opportunity to play with the best against the best. And you can't blame a guy that's playing at the U of H in a Group of Five conference. I know myself playing at the University of Memphis. There's a different pecking order and a different tier of everything when you talk about facilities, when you talk about places that you can live on and off campus, that are just your lifestyle as a student athlete when you're in a Power Five school versus a Group of Five school. It's very difficult to walk away from or turn your back on that allure. That's why people were so excited about Ed Oliver, the fact that he chose to go to U of H over all the different schools that he had opportunity to go to. You can't blame De'Aaron King for utilizing the flexibility that the red shirt and the transfer portal gives to him. You know what I mean? There's some big-time schools that are looking for his services. And if you have the ability to go to these places and potentially play for a national championship or potentially, you know, play against the best, if you want to make it to the NFL, your road becomes easier if you go to those type of schools. So you can't blame the kid for using the flexibility that's been afforded to him by the rules of NCAA.
Yeah, look, Wade, I said it when it happened. I was like, you know, I believe the kid. I think he's genuine, sincere. I've talked to Major Applewhite when he was over there as the quarterback. I mean, as the head coach, he loved the kid. He's a great kid, high character kid. So this isn't about character. This isn't about quitting on a team. This isn't about anything other than the kid red shirts. It sends a message. Schools start recruiting him. There's no doubt about it. And then the last week of the season, I went to an LSU Arkansas game at LSU in Death Valley at night.
Yeah.
You'd mean to tell me that any kid in his right mind that had the opportunity to go do something like that is at least gonna flip that stone.
I tell you what, man, you just look at the LSU hype videos. I watched about three or four of those hype videos on their road to the national championship, and I was like, damn,
come on.
Maybe I should have been a better high school athlete. I might have had an opportunity to play at LSU, man. But it's hard to fight against that allure of going to a program like that, especially how well they played this entire season. Got Ed O there. I wouldn't be surprised if that's a place they ended up.
I got to believe LSU's a front runner. It's a plug-and-play school where they need a quarterback. Miles Brennan's a good quarterback. I don't know that he's good enough to literally allow this football team to not miss a beat. I believe that De'Aaron King in LSU's offense is an absolute problem for the rest of the country. He's obviously electric with his feet. And he spins it better than I gave him credit before I went and watched him and before I really studied him. This kid can spin the rock. He's not Joe Burrow. He's not going to drop dimes down the field, you know, at a 90% completion clip.
Right.
But he can spin the rock. He poses different problems. That would have fit. That would be at LSU. The other one, my old alma mater.
Imagine that.
I don't think we have much of a shot. But Arkansas has hired. Stop
Woo
it.
Pig? Woo Suey?
Pig Suey, baby.
Okay.
Woo. Pig, Suey, Razorbacks. Now, look, here's the deal: is you got Kendall Briles, who was the offensive coordinator here a year ago with De'Aaron King
when 50 touchdown Kendall,
50 tugs, baby. Yeah. I think it was 36 passing and 14 running. I mean, the yards were impressive on both ends of it. So I think Arkansas may be maybe on the outside looking in, there may be a possibility, but. Boy, I'd be surprised if he ain't, if it's not one of those where he goes, I think LSU's the spot for me.
Yeah, I mean, I got love for you and Arkansas is cool and all, yeah. But you want to go somewhere to rebuild or you want to go somewhere to plug yourself in and you're right. Competing for a national championship within six to eight months.
Look, you ain't got to tell me twice, man. You ain't got, is it hot in here to you?
It's a little warmer here. You brought your jacket in here. You thought you was going to be
yesterday
cold.
Yesterday was cold. Yeah. I ain't going to lie to you, though, Wade. I'm liable to get a little funky in here today, Chief.
Dang, you ain't shower good? What's going on? You forgot to put on deodorant this morning?
Forgot to put on deodorant.
It happens every now and again.
I forgot to put on deodorant, and it's a little sticky right now. I ain't going to lie to you. It's a little sticky right now.
Unfortunately, I'm far enough away I shouldn't have to deal with it too much, especially if you don't, as long as you don't start doing some calisthenics, jumping jacks, anything like that in here.
Ooh.
I think we'll be good.
Hey man, I'm a hygiene guy too. You and I both talked about this funky breath and like body odor and stuff like that.
Deal breaker,
baby. It's hard for me to wrap my head around. And I forget my deodorant every now and then, but I don't ever remember like where I can, like the only time I smell myself is if I get my hand up over my head or something.
Yeah.
And I look that direction and my nose is that close. And I'm for the most part, I'm pretty clean, old boy. But if you get a hint of body odor over there, it's coming.
I'll just tell you to put the jacket back on, bro. Cover it back up.
Cover it back up. Oh man. Today at 3:35, we'll be joined by radio.com sports MLB insider Tony Gwynn Jr. Tony Gwynn, by the way, his pops, one of my favorite baseball players of all times. Loved him growing up. Tony Gwynn Jr., he'll join us at 3:35 with a look at the punishments handed down by Major League Baseball and the decision by the Astros to fire A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luno. Tony is brought to you by the new gas-powered Sprinter from Mercedes-Benz Vans. Next up, I mean, the offense ain't the only problem over there.
Yeah.
Off Kirby.
Yeah.
Wade. The Texans defense has some serious problems across the board. One major issue, that'll work itself out, I believe, but the biggest concern for 2020, they're on that side of the football, and we'll discuss each one of them next.
Oh, it's such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.